Greetings. I'm Bill Fleck, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Jennifer Eastman, who is Director of Community Living Policy for the Maryland Department of Disabilities. And Jennifer's here today to talk to us about the various things that the State Department of Disabilities does to help folks live in the community and to make our communities better. So, Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
First of all, could you tell us a little bit about the Department of Disabilities?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So our official mission is changing Maryland for the better by promoting equality of opportunity, access, and choice for Marylanders with disabilities. And we really do this through our coordination and advocacy through policy and programs initiatives across state departments. So we work a lot with the Departments of Health, Aging, and Human Services, and really try to, as they implement their programs and services, try to ensure that people with disabilities are being considered in all aspects of their service delivery.
I guess the local commissions on disability are, to some extent, an adjunct?
Yeah, so we are informed, a lot of our work is informed by the Commission on Disabilities, and they are really responsible for driving our state plan, and that needs to be renewed every 3 years. The regular commissions across the counties are kind of subsidiaries of that, independent, of course, but we work in conjunction with them.
How could someone get in touch with you folks?
So for more information, I would recommend going to our website. You can find us at mdod.maryland.gov, or you can call us at 410-767-3660, and our administrative assistant, Monique Brown, will be sure to triage you to the appropriate person or answer any questions you may have.
Tell us a little bit, please, about your background and your responsibilities as director of community living policy. That means you're supposed to make everything work, right?
If only it were that easy. I think in my work we've found more gaps than solutions, but I think by knowing the gaps we can work towards finding the solutions. But I've been with the department for 8 years. I started in a smaller capacity, a contractual capacity, responsible for working with our Centers for Independent Living. There are 7 throughout the state, and they are run by and for people with disabilities. And they had a partnership with the local area agencies on aging, and we were responsible. This project was charged with trying to find ways to sustain that partnership in the absence of federal funding. So when that sunsetted, I had a wonderful opportunity to step into this community living director role, and the services and the activities I engage in are pretty broad. So I do a lot with caregiving. I'm responsible for our state's attendant care program, which is $1.2 million program that provides financial reimbursement to people with chronic physical disabilities who pay out of pocket for their attendant care services. I also am staff to the Ethan Saylor Alliance for Self-Advocates as Educators, which is charged with preparing and supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to serve in training roles alongside first responders on how to better interact with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And then I do a lot of work with improving the health outcomes of people with disabilities. And I have a partner within the Department of Health Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Control. We did just conclude a 5-year grant from the Centers for Chronic Disease Prevention and Control. So now we're trying to continue that work in the absence of federal funding, which, as you can imagine, is pretty challenging.
And the need is greater than ever. The COVID emergency particularly showed a lot of holes in the safety nets, hasn't it?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. I mean, when we all moved to a 2-week mandatory stay followed by, it seems like, 2.5 years, a lot of the gaps in the system were really highlighted and proved very challenging. I mean, in some positive aspects, a lot of the in-home supports that were being provided through nursing and attendant care agencies were able to be provided by loved ones who had their person with a disability residing in their home, and they were actually able to get compensated for that, which is something that has kind of since gone away since we've been trying to get out of this state of emergency. So the need for attendant care and personal care services in the home to maintain safety was really magnified. And so it kind of brings to light two of these issues. It's number one, providing support and assistance and resources to the unpaid family and informal caregiver, because they're the ones that are really the backbone of the long-term services and support system.
As well as
the need for paid, well-compensated personal care services, because a lot of the people who are coming in and providing these really, these independent living skills to these people with disabilities are getting, $13 an hour, and they can go to Amazon and, drive a truck and get paid $15 or more. So, when it comes to actually how do you sustain a person in the community independently with a good quality of life, you need to take care of their informal family caregiver, and you need to compensate meaningfully the person coming in to provide the care.
Yeah, the move away from deinstitutionalization has been good and bad in that respect. I guess the governmental support for folks living independently has always been a question. Has always been a question, and probably as you're saying, really subject to the winds of fortune.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has really been working towards deinstitutionalization, and I feel like we've been making a lot more progress within the past, decade and a half or so, under the Obama administration. The Administration for Community Living was formed, and that's really all about, trying to create better independent living outcomes for people with disabilities and older adults, that they can stay in the community as long as possible. And a big issue when you asked about COVID is a lot of the people that we work with, and a lot of the organizations that we work with provide support and outreach to nursing facility residents. We have a program within our department, the Money Follows the Person Peer Outreach and Support Program. And we have contractors throughout the state that were charged and are charged into going into the nursing facilities and communicating with the residents about their community living options. And that was really halted. It came to a halt, as you can imagine, especially with all of the outbreaks that were happening within nursing facilities. And another really big concern was that we couldn't communicate with nursing facility residents. They didn't even have access to a phone at their bedside table. Some of them had a phone that was at the nurse's station that was just for the whole floor. So these seem to be like pretty obvious civil rights that people didn't have, and we didn't know about that until COVID.
Yeah. So in some ways, I guess out of crisis comes solutions, hopefully. I know that if I was listening back there to this show, I would say, my goodness, how can I find out more information about how I can get paid for something like that? Could you give us some contact information about some of these programs that you've mentioned?
Yeah, so what I would recommend is if you know somebody who has a loved one in a nursing facility, you should contact your local area agency on aging, and you can access that through Maryland Access Point. I could follow up with the number, but your local area agency on aging will help. I mean, you could certainly just reach out to me. You could reach out to me via the phone number 410-767-3660. Or you can certainly email me directly at jennifer.eastman, E-A-S-T-M-A-N, at maryland.gov. And I can triage you to the right person if I'm not that right person to answer your question.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Let's talk about November as National Family Caregiver Month. What is it and what's going on?
Yeah, so National Family Caregiver Month had started during President Clinton's administration, and it was really just a way to commemorate and celebrate the contributions and the sacrifices that informal and family caregivers provide to people with disabilities and older adults. And so we do it to raise awareness, to kind of try to get people who may not identify as a caregiver to identify as a caregiver. A lot of the people we talk to don't even recognize that even the short-term care that they provide to their parent or to their neighbor, and it could be as simple as, you know, grabbing their medications or taking them to a doctor appointment. You are a caregiver. And so we try to raise awareness during this month through social media messaging. We had an event where we brought in an author and radio host of Hope for the Caregiver, Peter Rosenberger, who just kind of was able to talk about his experience as a caregiver to his wife for over 30 years. And how important it is to, as you're taking care of your loved one, to really be sure to carve out time to take care of yourself, because you are only as helpful to the care recipient as you are healthy yourself. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And as part of that, Jennifer, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's really important for the caregivers out there to, as you said, understand that they're caregivers, but as part of that, to understand and to have resources to help deal with that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And there are resources available in the state that are both federally and state funded that you should definitely check out. One of the things we have been able to do, we've participated in a caregiver learning collaborative through the National Academy for State Health Policy, and it came with some funding, and we were able to develop informational videos on resources that are available to caregivers. So the Department of Human Services has a respite care program. The Developmental Disabilities Administration has a low-intensity support services program. We covered the Maryland Technology Assistance Program, which is also within the Department of Disabilities, to highlight items that substitute for human assistance, because we can't expect the caregiver to be there all the time, and we can't expect the paid caregiver to be there all the time. So what are things that can, you know, and can supplement that help that is needed?
Very important. Very important.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
yeah.
Jennifer, unfortunately, we are just about out of time. It does go fast. Could you please give us that contact information one more time, please, including for National Family Caregiver Month?
Yes, absolutely. So you can find out more information on our website, mdod.maryland.gov, or by calling 410-767-3660. And I would recommend following the Department of Human Services on Facebook. They are the department responsible for putting out all the social media messaging during National Family Caregiver Month. And you will also be able to access that recorded event, caregiver event, by Peter Rosenberger that was happened on Wednesday, November 9th.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. I would like to thank our guest, Jennifer Eastman, who is Director of Community Living Policy for the Maryland Department of Disabilities, for being our guest today. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Keep up your good work for all of us.
I will.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.